Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Sila Wealth Advisory is the Mindful Money Company. Our investments screen over 5,000 companies across the globe for their environmental impact. We think it's important to consider how your investments can benefit you and society without sacrificing returns. Visit us at silawealthadvisory.com and check out our free 60-second retirement solution. For all your investment questions, call Jeff Bogart at 855-757-7452 or email Jeff at jeff@silawealthadvisory.com. Now, here's Jeff with the Mindful Revolution.
Namaste, everybody. I'm Jeff Bogart of Sila Wealth Advisory, the Mindful Money Company, and I'd like to welcome you to the Mindful Revolution, where we interview some of the world's foremost thinkers and, of course, mindfulness. We'd love to hear from you during our show, so give us a call. The number is 646-478-4157. Again, 646-478-4157. You can email us a question. Email me at jeff@silawealthadvisory, Sila's S-I-L-A, wealthadvisory.com. If you're my Facebook buddy, feel free to ask a question there as well. Real quick, I want to remind you that all our shows are archived on Blog Talk Radio. So if you missed one of the great shows that we've had, don't worry. It's there. Just go to Blog Talk Radio, search the Mindful Revolution, look at who you want to listen to, download it, and you're good to go. Well, as they said in the movie The Graduate, the future may indeed be in plastics. David Katz is the founder and CEO of The Plastic Bank, an ambitious social enterprise that aims to solve the plastic pollution problem and poverty at the same time. The Plastic Bank provides an opportunity for the world's poor to collect and trade plastic waste as a currency. That's right, as a currency. So let's forget about the bitcoins here, folks. Plastic waste found at beaches and other waterways is turned into a source of income for our world's most marginalized citizens. What's more, plastic collectors can get access to 3D printers, creating entrepreneurial opportunities as well. Today, David Katz, who is the president of the Entrepreneurs Organization Vancouver chapter and recent winner of the organization's Global Citizen Award, will share his inspiration for reducing global poverty and stopping plastic from entering our oceans. Namaste, David.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jeff.
Oh, love it. Very fascinating subject. Great. This is kind of near and dear to my heart. You know, we do a lot of sustainable investments, so this kind of fits right into what we do. Before we get into the plastic bank, things of that nature, why don't you give us your background, David? Where did you grow up? What was your path? And how did you end up doing the plastic bank?
Oh, what a long story, and it's such great questions because, you know, we've got to look at the origin because, you know, and as I do and when I study, you know, biographies of people, you know, what's made them who they are. So it's an important question.
Exactly.
And I'm, you know, I'm just a humble guy in the end, you know, and I want to fast track it a little bit, tell you that I grew up on the west coast of Canada. I grew up in a city called Victoria on an island. Father was a sailor. You grew up in the merchant marines and love the ocean. I certainly had an affinity for the ocean. And I take a lot of my inspiration from the ocean, but I think that more than anything else, this is really an affinity for people. This is a love for people. And that came from having a daughter that was unexpectedly born with Down syndrome. And as beautiful and gorgeous as Ella is, really the lesson there was for me. And to overcome my prejudice, my judgment, and to begin looking inside of people, to look inside someone's eyes and to love them as they are, for who they are, where they are, and maybe not so much for where they are, but where they can go. And so my story is really growing up on the west coast of Canada, being associated with the ocean, persevering, overcoming. My parents were entrepreneurs, immigrants to the country, not speaking the language. And what I grew up with was you know, an influence of people living in problem and finding solutions all the time. Now, when it came to having Ella, that was my own journey. And to overcome that and to see that. And so when I began to love people and I began to see the beauty in life and I got to see solutions in life. And so I'm here now because I ultimately in the entrepreneurial journey got to a place where I stopped looking at problems and looked for the opportunities that lie inside them. And that's really how I got to where I'm at. Do you want to know more than that or?
Well, yeah, where'd your parents come from? It's interesting. Your dad was a merchant marine. Did he land in another country in Canada?
Yeah.
Were they refugees? That's interesting to me.
Well, you know, they emigrated from Israel. My mom was 13 generations from Jerusalem. He was in Israel's First Navy and was a traveler, and they wanted to seek a better life that, you know, maybe had less hostility and find opportunity. Right. So that's really that's kind of the story.
And what did you go to college? What did you study in college? Environmental studies.
I'm a very very well. I'm a very proud high school graduate, and I very very solid C student. And that's not to say that that's where my education ended, because I do read a book a week, and I'm probably one of the better read people that I know. I am a continuous life learner and studier. I love development in business and itself. And as an entrepreneur, you know, I'm only as good as I am. And you can have a tremendous amount of business skill, but if you don't have life skill, if you don't have the ability to overcome self, then you can't really flourish. And I believe the most sustainable, the most loving and caring brands today, or those organizations that are sustainable, are the ones that love people and that are led by CEOs that have heart. And that's a journey of self, right? I mean, it's not about self. It's about not needing to feed self. It's not about the self ego. It's about serving others.
You can't hate your boss when you're self-employed either, I've learned.
No, you can talk. Yeah, you can sometimes. What have you done?
You can't blame your boss.
No, you can't. No, you
can't.
But it's never any blame anyhow. I mean, it's all learning, right? I mean, the obstacle is there. Right.
Have you ever heard of a book called Think and Grow Rich? It was written in the 1920s by Napoleon Hill.
It's such an important book. It's an important. It's a fundamental and a foundation. That, you know, it really should be a foundation to many. Right?
I mean, he discovered most of the turn of the century billionaires. Barely graduated high school.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They all use, like you said, heart. They use meditation. They use all sorts of, you know, visualization.
Yeah.
And they all have plans to give their money away. So what adventure were you doing before the plastic bank? Where did life lead you? Like,
So part of the original question as well is how did I get to where I am? Well, you know, my father, as creative as he was, when I was just 13, embarked on building a 47-foot sailboat by himself from the hull up. And he was a great early adopter of technology and installed at the time, this was 1983, 84, this big box, like foot by foot by 2 feet almost, next to the chart table with this, you know, antenna on top of the mast. And it was a very early GPS. And this was before you'd have the constellation of satellites we have today, where you've got continuous trilateration and you'd have this continuous flow of data. This was something you'd get to locate every about 4 hours or so. And to make a long story short, we were on a journey. I was sailing with him, and we're on a journey back from San Francisco up to the west coast of Canada, where we're off the Mendocino coast in a 60-knot wind and a 20-foot breaking wave on our second dawn. And my father had a heart attack, and I was quite convinced that I was going to die in that storm. My father as well. I had somewhat lost, you look in the eyes of your father, you've got hope when his stuff hits the fan, but he had lost hope and started giving me his jewelry and his last testament and was resigning himself to die at sea. And because I had this GPS coordinate, I was able to convey that to the U.S. Coast Guard, call a mayday. And after about 4 hours, the helicopter they sent from San Francisco, they rescued my father and sailed me back. Now, fast forward, the last business that I had was a GPS-based business where we did mobile workforce management and we installed a GPS tracking solution inside mobile workforce vehicles that allowed our clients to be able to reduce not just their carbon emission, but their overall expenditure in the delivery of products and services. And so you never know, really, how life unfolds.
Wow. And what one lesson. Green is profitable, right? Green is profitable.
Totally. Yeah.
And now, let me ask you about your father and the yacht he built. What materials did he build the yacht from?
It was balsa and fiberglass.
Okay. So fiberglass is a form of plastic, is that correct? Or glass? What is fiberglass actually?
It's glass. It's, I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know where you're leading me with that. But
no, we're real. I'm just curious. In other words, well, yachts used to be built out of teak. I know that.
Yeah.
I know they're plastic now.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
So it's all changed. So, yeah. So there's my segue. How's that for a segue?
Yeah, good.
We're using plastics. We used to use wood and stuff. Okay. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So the days of the old, teak yachts and those beautiful boats are just not, I guess it's less care.
It's much less care and safer as well.
Right.
And easier to repair.
Okay,
and
so
all the rest
part
of
the plastic bank, I mean, you have a mission, and the first part of the mission is to stop plastic from going into the ocean, correct?
There's a couple of missions. And if I'm really to back it out, I'll tell you that I know within my heart that it's the business solution to poverty and the business solution to malnutrition and the business solution to healthcare and the business solution to all of the world's maladies. And I know that it's an entrepreneur that has the ability to overcome those problems, to see not the problem, but the solution itself that will be the catalyst to change. And on the inside, really, Jeff, my mission ultimately is to continue to reveal the profitability in it and to lead an army of entrepreneurs into finding solutions around the world. That's really the mission. And I am more passionate about finding other people to help and create other entrepreneurs and inspire people, because it's not about the handout. It's not about you can't solve poverty with a handout. You solve poverty by treating people like customers and treating them like customers and serving them and finding solutions that they can afford to bring themselves out of poverty and then give other people an opportunity to become entrepreneurial themselves and find their own solutions. And there is no better way to solve the problems of a community than to use the community itself. And that's entrepreneurship. So that's kind of underlying. But ultimately, ocean-bound waterways, keeping plastic out of the ocean, that is it. And working on important instead of urgent. Now we can, there's, circulating on the internet, there's, kid out of Amsterdam that's, I can go out and I can, I've dreamed up of some machine that can go out in the ocean and find these little microbes of plant. Well, sure, we can continue to work on what's urgent. And that is a part of what's urgent. And sure, that's an issue. But more importantly, really what is really important is to keep the plastic from entering the ocean to begin with, and that's what we have to focus our energy on. Once we can stem that, then let's go clean up the ocean, sure. But let's put all of our effort into keeping the plastic from entering the ocean.
Okay, so you want to attack the root of the problem.
That's what we're supposed to be doing, isn't it?
Right, exactly.
I mean, that's it. I mean,
now, let me ask you, I want to ask about plastics in the ocean. So it's been said there's a plastic island the size of Texas in the middle of the ocean somewhere. Is that true?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Yes and no. I mean, from the countless islands that I've been to, and really almost all oceans. It's not like an island. It's not like it's floating and all. I mean, it's not like it's like one big landmass. That's all come together. I mean, there's just thousands and thousands of pieces below the surface, and there's just so much plastic. And I just had a tour this last year. I did the South China Sea, which is a catastrophe, and you see these beautiful beaches, and you just have to run your hand through the water, and it's full of plastic fragments, full of plastic fragments. And so that's really the island. I mean, there's just so much plastic and flying right below the surface of the water. And remember that a lot of the plastic, you know, unless it's been caught by air, and some are less dense than water, so they float. But the majority of plastic, you know, negatively buoyant, and it sinks. So plastic sinks. So, you know, lots of concern. And what we see on the shoreline in the seagrass, that's really just what the ocean's spitting back out at us. So much plastic in the ocean. I mean, you can just, you know, I recommend listeners go to midwayfilm.com. Midwayfilm, MIDDWAY, film.com. And it's a beautiful 3-minute video. Fell out of Seattle. It went to Midway Island, 2,000 miles from any continent, and filmed this albatross rookery, where it shows, you know, ultimately there are thousands of birds dying from plastic ingestion, and they're not necessarily immediately dying from the plastic itself, but they're the starving full. So much plastic in their belly that they can't get nutrients. Now, we see that happening in the bellies of whales now. We see that in fish. Even on the west coast of Canada here, we just had a few weeks ago, a fellow who you know, caught a salmon in one of the local rivers, and its belly also full of plastic. So much plastic in the waterways, so much plastic in the ocean that we see it in the bellies of animals. I mean, that's a problem. That's an issue.
Now, where is this? Yes, it is. Where is this plastic coming from? Our country, developed countries, third world countries, both.
You know, yeah, it's coming. Where's it coming from? It's coming from everywhere. But I can tell you that where I've seen it the worst is in the developing nations, where there's no solid waste infrastructure. There's so little road structure that they can't. I mean, garbage truck. I mean, what? You know, when your government, when your national government is a, doesn't have enough opportunity to feed its population. It's not quite at the level to be concerned about solid waste infrastructure as much as it should be. And we see,
so third
we see,
world, they're using, you know, they're using more plastic per capita than we are, is what I'm hearing. Is that true? We're throwing it out.
You know what? Their waste is far greater. Far greater. And at least, you know, it's a catastrophe everywhere, Jeff. It's like you just need go to Florida, like Miami. It's ridiculous. You can't find a recycling bin anywhere. It's not possible.
Really?
Everyone throws it in the garbage can. I haven't seen one. I've only traveled, the Gulf Coast. I've done most of the Gulf Coast,
right,
and then all of Miami, South Beach, up into Fort Lauderdale and a little bit further north. I never saw a recycling bin. Now, I know that there's recycling facilities there, and I know that there's processing facilities, but I don't see the population with access to the ability to make a change themselves to do what's appropriate, what's right, you know. And then what is that, you know, how do, what is that, what kind of message does that perpetuate that yes, plastic
right.
just garbage just continue to ring in the garbage can. Now, that all being said, at least there's solid waste infrastructure where someone comes by, picks it up, it's in the bag, it goes in the back of a garbage truck, and it eventually gets into a landfill and it gets buried. So chances
sure.
are that it hopefully won't make it into the ocean. Now, when you go into Latin America and you're living inland and there's no solid waste infrastructure, and you're in a small city of, let's say, 30,000 people, and there's not even
sure.
a garbage dump, and there's just a dump truck where everyone throws their garbage into it, and it just makes a little journey downriver a little bit, backs up to the river, and dumps all of the garbage into the river.
So things we take for granted in this country don't happen in a lot of third world countries.
Doesn't happen. What we take for granted in North America doesn't happen to most of the world.
Right.
Set aside developing countries. I mean, it's a global issue. Global
right.
issue. And then when you look at the population, the density of population within the developing nations and stuff, and you know, and even you know, I'm very passionate about Haiti, and I'm going to direct my attention
sure,
to Haiti
sure.
today, because that's really, you know, and most of their water. I mean, a lot of there's cholera on the water table, and so they're getting most of the population is getting the water out of this. You know, I'll talk about Port-au-Prince city, you know, 4 million people. Know, I mean, it's a catastrophe. I mean, the people are beautiful. Haitians are beautiful. The people are beautiful. It's a smile multiplying country. I think it's probably the friendliest nation in the Caribbean, and you know, a lot of reasons why that country is where it's at, and including natural disaster and the earthquake and everything else. But cholera in the water table, and much of their water comes in little plastic bags sold on the side of the road, sachet. And they drink that, and they take, you know, they're going through, you know, five or six of those a day. It's a low density polyethylene, and that's just being thrown on the ground. I mean, you just discard it. Like, it's just, and it's light and it's blowing, and of course it makes it into the ocean.
Right.
I mean, it's on the ocean. Of course it's making it to the ocean. I mean, there's just...
Hey, how about we take a call, David? This would be Fadi.
Sure, there's a call. Let's take a call, yeah.
Ann Arbor, Michigan. Hello, Fadi.
Hello. Hello, hi. Jeff. Hello, David. How are you?
Hi.
Hi.
Jeff, I'm amazing. I don't know how Jeff is.
Jeff's amazing.
Ask Fadi,
trust
if
me.
I'm amazing or not. I don't know.
You're amazing, Jeff. You're one of the good guys, for sure. Yeah, I just find what you're doing fascinating and awesome. And it's a very complicated situation. I mean, when you start to go, okay, is it this nation or is that nation? It's everybody. I mean,
right.
It really is. Because, I mean, if we were, you know, true humans, we would be very concerned about those underdeveloped nations and see what our part is. But instead, we worry more about our big corporations, or at least the big corporations worry more about their bottom line and... you know, it's just a cutthroat situation. But
I think it's changing, though. I think it's changing.
I certainly want to be part of the change.
Fadi, let David respond to what you said. Okay, he was going to say something.
Yeah, and you had a question, so I feel a little bit bad by cutting you off, but I'm passionate and I'm getting excited on the show, of course. But you know, ultimately, it's everyone's responsibility, and as you said, and I think the more that you demand that corporations are sustainable, then the more they will be. They'll have to be, and I think the new generation today is demanding that as well. And we see, you know, decreased, you know, new car sales and all kinds of the new generation today. If you're not going to be social, you're not going to be in business, and I'm buoyed by that because I know that's the consumer making a decision, and it's business, and if they know that the consumer demands that, they'll rise to meet the need. A little bit of a sidebar, and forgive me for cutting you off, but you have a question.
Oh no, you're fine. That's how we roll here. We have open conversations. So,
awesome.
What about when you go into the grocery store and you see all of the plastic? I mean, there's so much. You can't ignore that. I mean, how do we change that, and how much of what we have in the plastic bottles do we really need anyway? Should we even be producing this? Why do we have such low standards?
I have staff that tell me that I shouldn't chat this through, but I'm going to. But I love plastic. What's wrong with plastic? Plastic's fantastic. It's awesome. It's lightweight. It's easy to transport. It's lower emission to transport everything. You can keep everything very, very hygienic. I mean, there's all kinds of standards. It's amazing for medical use, for food, for all kinds of things. It's an amazing material, and it's not the plastic that's the issue. It's the way we view the plastic. It's what we do with the plastic after. That's what I'm changing. By monetizing it, by showing people that it's actually petroleum. It's not plastic. It's oil, for Pete's sakes. And if every plastic bottle – well, I'll ask you both. If every plastic bottle was worth $5, how many of them do you think would be in the garbage can?
Not many.
None.
So it's not the plastic. It's the way we view the value in the plastic. That's the issue.
Oh. Why did you ever think
in
of it like
Michigan,
that? I never did.
In Michigan, where I live, each bottle is worth 10 cents. So when you return it to the store, you get 10 cents.
You
pay the 10 cents when you buy it. In order to get your 10 cents back, you have to bring it back. And it's very successful.
Yes. It's incredibly successful. Of course, it revealed the value in the plastic. Oh, okay. That's not rocket science, right? And then you find it. You know, you find this section of the population that understands value of money, that is motivated to go and get 10 cents because every 10 bottles is a dollar, right?
Yeah.
And it doesn't take much to supplement
your income. Yeah, we used to have drives to make money to buy uniforms.
Right.
It was great because people would have like $50 in their garage and, you know, they'd be like, yeah, take it, you know.
Right.
So that's Michigan. I wish everybody would do it, but not everybody does that.
They don't. A lot don't, and they need to. And that's the beginning of the solution. And that's what we're doing because they've monetized plastic. That's it.
Yes. Yeah. And have you ever read about the houses that they're making with the plastic bottles? Have you seen that? where they fill it up with sand.
I'm very and beautiful. And it's a great material, well insulated, are more resistant to other natural forces, you know, high wind and other things. All kinds of great things about it. Totally. Yeah, that's repurposing it. That's monetizing it as well. Same sort of thing. Reveal value in plastic. You know, that's really the way that I operate the organization. I've got three tenets, three principles, the three core values, and love people, continuously improve, and reveal value. Reveal value. Okay, reveal value. Look, everybody, look, there's money in that. And how else can we monetize it? How else can we reveal value in that so that people never throw it away? How can we reveal value in such a way that people want to hoard it and look for it? And oh, my God, there's a piece of plastic. Let me go get it because that'll change my life.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
Right. It's not the plastic. Plastic's fantastic. It's awesome. Now, I think there's a lot of wasteful plastic like straws and other tiddly bits that we get a second use out of that's completely wasteful. Things that we're not recycling, like lids in your Starbucks, when they give you a lid anyhow and you don't need one, it's got like a 2-second shelf life. That's
right.
Ridiculous. That's wasteful. And so I guide myself by value again. So is there value in that? There's no value in that. That's wasteful. I'm not going to conduct my life that way. And if I know, if I look and I conduct my life in a way that I see things as being wasteful, well, how will I treat money as being wasteful as well? Probably. Or if I have a view that things
plastic is not bad, plastic is not evil, it's an inert object that people need to value more is what I'm hearing, right?
Amen.
Got it.
Amen.
Amen. Well, I definitely think that people need to value other people, and I would love to see housing developments of plastic, you know, of houses made out of plastic, and, you know, that would just be amazing, and we could house the poor, and that's what I would love to see.
I mean, there's so many. That's beautiful too. Absolutely. And if I have any conversation, if I leave any dialogue, I really can express as I had in the opening here that you can choose to see things as a problem, or you can choose to see the solution that lies within it. And the obstacle is the way. And whatever the obstacle is, the solution lies in it, and the opportunity lies in it. And the challenge with environmentalists, bless them, because they certainly expose all of the challenges that we have in life, and they continue to expose all of the problems, but they stop there. And that makes them very abrasive for some. And so some that need to hear the message won't hear it because they feel repelled. As opposed to saying, hey, here's problems in the world, and then, you know what, and here's solutions, and this is how everyone can be involved, and here's beauty in it. So never stop looking at the issue itself. Never stop there. You do it a disservice by not putting your energy and time into finding the solution.
Thank you so much for finding the solution to this. I can see that what you're doing is a beautiful thing. Thank you for being
on
the show.
Thank you.
And thank you, Jeff.
Thanks for calling.
Yes. You're welcome.
Thanks, Fadia.
Awesome.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll
talk
to you guys
later.
Bye.
Okay.
Bye,
Fadia. That was
Fadia. Bye.
And for our listeners, Fadia often does very fascinating guest host spots of what she thinks is interesting. So make sure to check her show out. The last one was about floating yoga mats, if you can believe that, David. Where people are doing yoga and exercise in swimming pools on water now.
Isn't
that cool? Yeah.
Awesome.
So
whatever inspires someone
I love
to
it.
Get better.
I love what you're saying. So I want to – now let's go. We have our first email question. This is from Paula from Pocatello, Idaho. It's my first ever from Idaho,
cool.
I think. I find – and Idaho's a beautiful state, meanwhile. People have never been there. I find what you're saying just staggering. Her question is, with fish ingesting so much plastic, is it really safe to eat? Do you eat fish? And then thanks for bringing more awareness to this issue.
Well, thanks for the email. You rock for even being so concerned to go and actually pose a question. So thank you, because it requires everyone to find the solutions, of course. And there's fish and there's plastic in the bellies of fish around the world, and that's a challenge. Now, is plastic itself toxic? Well, but does it hold on to toxics? I mean, do toxins attach themselves to the plastics? Then the fish ingest that and then consume the toxin. It's such a broad question. I eat a lot of fish. I try to eat very cleanly, and I try to watch the source of the fish that I'm eating. And you know, salmon for myself, you know, it's in the ocean for 4 years, and It's difficult. I mean, it's creating less methane, less everything else, and beef and all of they still have to
good
eat.
Plot,
but you know, I think that you know challenges are when you get these fish that, you know, when you look at the food chain and you get this fish that's been ingesting all kinds of other fish that have been ingesting other plastics. I mean, you can't help but think that there's going to be some issues in, you know, mercury and other things. And I think you got to be conscious on what you eat, because, you know, you truly are. I mean, every cell in your body is you know, regenerated from the food that you're ingesting. And so you are what you eat, and you got to be careful. No question. And if anything, I mean, thank you, for the email, and more importantly, watch what you're doing with your plastic, treasure it, honor it, and ensure that it never ends up in a waterway.
Great. Now let's talk about how plastics can improve the life of disadvantaged people, mostly from third world countries.
Yeah, I think it can improve the life of anyone anywhere. Just as you know, we learned about the bottle exchange program.
Right.
And, you know, so but yes, I mean, it makes an even greater impact in developing nations, even greater, because every penny is multiplied.
Sure.
And you know, so okay, so what would you like to know? I mean, it's so broad. There's so many amazing things happening.
So, like, give us a real world example of how people in the third world have collected or recycled plastic, and doing so has made their life easier or better. More improved.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, imagine not having access to medical care. Imagine having a sick child that you know that you need medicine for, but you know you've got 3-4 other children that need food, and so you know they become very, very difficult, very, very difficult questions that we ask ourselves, and one
sure.
way I would hope that nobody ever has to ask themselves. And then also at the same time, know that your environment is just full of garbage, full of plastic waste, full of bottles, full of film, full of other material, full of everything. And you can then just go outside and look at that plastic and say, oh my gosh, there's value in the plastic. You can collect it. You can keep it. You can bank it.
Wow.
And then you can use it as money to pay for the things that you need the most. Well,
so let me ask you about the latter. Is it almost like a Bitcoin? How does one use plastic?
No, I mean, so we've got a collection center. So we'll talk about, you know, the project in Haiti. It's called Ramasser Le Jean, and that means picking up money. So picking up money. So it allows a collector, someone who's associated with a program, because we want to know who's collecting. We want to, you know, certainly ensure that children aren't leaving school to collect. It allows them to go in the environment, collect
right.
plastic, bring it to a collection center, and they get paid cash for it. Well, that's one way. Or that's the general population, as we continue to build this out, it lets the general population to collect 20 bottles, which is a pound of plastic, 20 small bottles, pound of plastic, and you can come in, you can get an hour worth of Wi-Fi. Or you can collect 20 small bottles, and in areas where there's rolling power or no consistent power, you can come to our centers and recharge your phone. Which
wow.
we do through solar, right?
Got it.
Or you can, right, or you can FaceTime a family member around the country, right?
Wow.
Or all kinds of things. So it's really, what's the value? What's the value?
Right.
What can
right.
we provide that doesn't really cost a ton but doesn't allow, you know, people don't have ready access to it and allows them just to use the bottles that they have in their community to pay for the things that need the most?
Right.
Well, okay, what's Wi-Fi do? What's power? What does free power do? Think about free power. Just power itself. How will that influence a community? Now, you got to come to our center. It's not like we're distributing it. But, yeah, you need your cell phone charged so that you can go online.
Right.
So you can communicate with someone so you can learn something.
I need to heat my house. I need my electricity to boil my mm-hmm. water. Sure.
Well, those are all very important. And when you're living in a community that doesn't have consistent power, then you still need to be able to communicate, and you can't even charge your cell phone.
Right.
Right.
Now, there have
been several segments
on 60 Minutes, David, that have addressed this issue. Where I think it was in Peru. I can't remember which, or Uruguay, where there were actually people were garbage farmers, and they were making a living.
Yeah.
Taking things that everyone other people threw away. So one man's garbage is another man's treasure.
Another man's treasure.
I see another segment where people make musical instruments out of garbage and create orchestras.
Yeah. Yeah. The landfill harmonic. Right.
So, I mean,
yeah,
it's
totally.
Just amazing.
It's the way we view it. Yeah.
Exactly. So it's all the way we view it and help people look at it differently so we can lift them out of poverty. Because poverty
and
is
so,
certain,
and, you know,
I'm hearing.
Yeah, well, poverty is an opportunity.
Right.
It's a business
I
solution
agree.
To that.
Right.
It's an opportunity. Oh, my gosh, you're in poverty. Well, how do I, oh, my gosh, we can all grow together. I can help you make money and I'll benefit, you'll benefit, the world will benefit. You'll be able to free yourself from your basic needs of food and shelter, and you'll be able to become creative.
Exactly.
And you'll be able to provide hope to the children in your home. That will change the way they think. Oh, boy. So now it doesn't end there with us, hey? So, you know, that plastic is a value. So yeah, we're ultimately, you know, we're a plastics broker. So we, you know, we have a global trademark, social plastic. Social plastic. So we provide plastic to manufacturers that want to exhibit social responsibility in their manufacturing.
Mm-hmm.
That's easy. So that a consumer gets to make a decision and say, hey, you know what? If I'm gonna have to buy something with plastic, I'm gonna buy something that has plastic that has actually helped someone come out of poverty, and that actually kept it out of the ocean.
Right. So we're stopping it to get there. Now, you have centers in Haiti and other third world countries?
Yeah, you know, I'm most proud of Haiti. I want to chat about Haiti because Haiti needs a lot of attention, and it's the poorest nation in the Western Hemisphere, and the people are beautiful, and it's ripe with opportunity. And if there's anyone listening to this that's also an entrepreneur that wants to figure out how to, you know, there's a beautiful market. There's 12 million people in Haiti. There's all kinds of opportunity in Haiti to serve them. And I know that there's going to be untold millionaires that are going to come out of the blossoming of that beautiful nation. And yeah, there's 26 centers across the country and collect around 3 million pounds of plastic annually. That's it's tens of millions of bottles and other types of plastic, and that plastic is sold and then reused. And most importantly, if I chat the business through, we bring price consistency. And so one of the greatest challenges that's been faced on a global recycling industry is the plummeting oil prices, because many people don't know, but plastic is petroleum. And so with the low price of oil, virgin plastics have become so inexpensive that recycled plastic has become less attractive, and therefore that rate has dropped. And so in the developing nations, we're seeing a 60 to 80% reduction in recycling rate. Well, that's a catastrophe. That's a catastrophe. And so consistency, price consistency is what answers that. So when we sell a future on that plastic, so we get our customers to commit to a three-year price. And that three-year price we pass on, again, so that people don't have to worry about price inconsistency. And now when you're talking and you're conversing with the world's most impoverished, and in Haiti, we're at like a 75 to 80% illiteracy rate. And a 75 to 80% unemployment rate. So when they are out collecting plastic all day, come in and it's less than the day before, they just feel further taken advantage of. They feel further diminished, and no one's explained it to them. So those are the things we do. I mean, it's all communications, it's process, but we don't have to when we get price consistency. They just become reliant on it.
They
don't
have to worry
about
market fluctuations. They know what they're going to get. The buyer knows
so what they're
going to pay
worry
for
about.
Too.
Exactly. Okay. And so the only thing
the
that the collector thinks about is
commodity
volume.
Price.
Right.
Most commodities are going to vary price, you know, by the minute. Interesting.
Right.
Now, how do you get the plastic from Haiti or Malaysia to a manufacturer in Canada, United States, China? How does it ship?
Container? Yeah, shipping container. Now, we try to process, like, you know, we'll get Haiti Recycling, Stefan, this family, they're beautiful people, you know, really passionate about helping clean Haiti. And they've got a great facility, and they shred the plastic ultimately, and they sort and bale if needed as well. And it's put in a container and shipped to
you know, where one of our customers' processing facilities might be. So that's very easy. It's simple. It's easy. I'm telling you, like, as far as businesses that I've had in the past, this is actually not complicated.
Got it. Got it. And you have a lot of, you call these centers, is it repurposing?
Yeah, you know, in Haiti there it's a collection center, but you know, repurposing center as well. And then we're just in the midst of we've spent a long time to try to create. We've been using Capstone team of engineers from the University of British Columbia, a tabletop 3D printing filament extruder. Now that's kind of the first step to allowing people to go out in the environment, collect plastic, and on site create new things out of it. And you can create anything that you want, 3D printing out of the manufacturing. Certainly, it could be a game changer. And if you can go out in the environment and we incent it, and the idea is and the incentivization is that the more you collect, the more time you get on the 3D printer, it's the more things you can create. Collect more, manufacture things that have even more value. Let's say once they've got price consistency, they've got money, they've got enough money, they've got consistent source of money. Now, what they get to do is they get to multiply their effort by now they've got time on a printer and they can go and create something. Let's say they've gone out and they're creative entrepreneurs and they've created little collection centers at mechanics with mechanics around their community, and the mechanic needs a flange or it needs a button or a connector or something. That they wouldn't be able to get. But the collector themselves, knowing that, can go back and create that and maybe sell that for 100x or 1,000x of what the material would be worth. And that's the real – that I think that's
so
real.
So really we're releasing the most valuable resource, human brain power.
That's what we're doing. It's revealing value in people. That's what we're doing. No
we're
better to solve
them
the problem.
Giving people a chance to really – become creative.
Correct.
Or exercise their, just like immigrants to this country. At one point, many people didn't have an opportunity in Europe.
Amen.
You know, they were smart socially, they just couldn't
yes.
move up. Where here, they were allowed
yes.
to expand their thought process.
Yes.
No different.
Right.
Wow.
No different.
I love it. What has been created on these 3D printers? Anything in particular that that I would know about?
Yeah, we're just starting that project. That's
got it.
That is, you know, I anticipate educational toys, connectors and things that will connect materials in their community. I anticipate things they'll be able to use in their home to improve the quality of education and the family. And I see things for, you know, some levels of medical use and who knows? Anything, everything.
And how many countries are involved in this plastic bank, David?
Well, right now, you know, a few in Latin America and Haiti. So it's been 2 years that we've been fully implementing. I see that within the next few months we'll be in the Dominican Republic just because it's so close, and there's a need there as well. And the entire Caribbean, there's a need. I just did a 14-island tour of that and have created some great relationships there. And using Haiti recycling as well, it's fairly straightforward when the country doesn't have a processing facility to kind of bail it and ship it. And we continue to build out a great team. I do need help, of course. I'm, you know, just an entrepreneur and I don't have all the solutions. I just have the tenacity to keep working towards them. And if there's listeners that want to contribute and help and be a part, then, you know, I'm always happy to chat. David@plasticbank.org. And, you know, certainly happy to, you know, help facilitate, you know, someone's desire to
sure.
give back to the world. And if we can have them be part of the plastic bank, I'm happy to do that. And
dude,
there's all kinds of ways to
take a small step back here.
Yeah.
One of my questions in the pre-interview, my research, something happened to you when you're in Malaysia. You saw an ad that opened your eyes about the plastic problem.
Well, no. As a matter of fact, it was, you know, I had a bit of a journey, and you know, I've been, you know, certainly the challenge has been center. And I was in Manila. I was in the Manila Bay, and I was at the aquarium of all places. And that, you know, the wall of the aquarium was on the Manila Bay, and it was the worst because the water was so clear. It was the worst that I'd ever seen it.
because I was standing high, maybe 50, 60 feet in the water, and I had this bird's eye view, and you could see fish swimming, but all you could see under the surface and on the bottom of the ocean, on the sea floor, was plastic. I was so moved by it, so taken by it, and it was so center in my mind. And then from that, I was very fortunate. I was able to attend an event at Singularity University at the Ames NASA Ames Research Facility in Silicon Valley, a program that was created by Peter Diamandis, founder of the XPRIZE, and Ray Kurzweil, one of the greatest futurists of our time. And they created the Singularity University, and it was an opportunity to bring the greatest minds in exponential technologies together. And it was there that I was, and no, because I was solutions focused, and I was looking for solutions. And so I was surrounded by some of the greatest minds in society, and I was able to formulate just this idea while I was there. And that came from that passion from being in the Manila Harbor and knowing that something had to be done.
Got it.
And if, you know, and I know if it's to be, it's up to me, right? I mean, if it's to be, it's up to me. I can't.
So that was your mastermind group, so to say, right, David? Those people.
Kind of. One of them, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
You know, the Entrepreneurs Organization is as well. I mean, you know, I continue to surround myself by other great, accomplished people who continue to seek solutions. And I only surround myself by people who are positive, like-minded people, and knowing that you become the company that you keep. And when I'm interviewing people, one of my predominant interview questions is, tell me about your best friends. How long they've been your best friends? Why are they your best friends? What do you like about them? What would you change about them? What are the quirks about them?
Mm-hmm.
And if I know who your best friends are, I know who you are, pretty much.
Got it.
So,
interesting.
You know, be careful of the company you keep.
Well, my two best friends have been there since I've been like 3 years old. I don't think I can get rid of them. Anyways, you also have an affiliation or partnership with Lush Cosmetics. Tell us about that, David.
Lush has been so great. I mean, they're just such a great, you know, they're passionate as well. And they're, a sustainable brand, right? I mean, they want to make sure they have no impact. They're trying to change people's lives as well. I mean, they've got a great cosmetic
brand.
And fragrance brand, and really it's a, you know, and I'm passionate because they're focused on, you know, female consumers, and here we have an opportunity where every female consumer, when they purchase something at Lush, any of the packaging, any of the plastic, has helped someone come out of poverty as well. So they're you know, we're just an example of one of our brand relationships, and you know, someone who's just as passionate about changing the world. And see, when you've got collaboration and you watch the company you keep, and you keep company with other people who want to do the same thing, what can't you accomplish?
Hmm. So is Lush using recycled plastic for their makeups or their products?
They had been, but now it's going to be all social plastic.
Got it. That's what I meant. I'm getting so social
yeah.
plastic
yeah.
is recycled plastic that is married with the idea of eliminating poverty
yeah.
in the third world.
Right.
And you also got involved with an actor from the Vampire Diaries. Got involved with you too, Ian.
Well, I would say that Ian Somerhalder. I mean, he tweeted about us, which was kind of nice. He's got a 4 million fans or something like that. But you know, I think everyone, you know, I'm not after chasing anyone. It's not that. The idea here is to create change and be change, and I think there's some beautiful quotes from Gandhi, you know, be the change you want to see in the world. And I'm more concerned about doing doing things and being active than waiting for someone else to tweet about me or something like that. I'm way more powerful than an actor.
Got it. That hey,
might
have
come across
wrong. Email. This is Sandy.
Yeah.
Sandy's from New York City, and she says, I'm really enjoying your conversation. At the beginning of the show, you mentioned that the ability to overcome self, she quote-unquote self,
uh-huh.
and a journey of self. She said that's
yeah.
pretty yogic. Just curious if you have
uh-huh.
practiced yoga.
Well, what's yoga? I mean, yoga is centeredness. I mean, yoga is about being less susceptible to external forces, to feel so grounded, so I enjoy yoga for sure. I enjoy yoga. I studied yoga, not as much as I know that I need to. Do I meditate? Yeah, I meditate. Do I enjoy finding self and finding calm in myself so I can overcome self, so I can still the voices in my head, because I just as any have just as much self-doubt
I just have a tenacity to be able to overcome the self-doubt. I there's no difference between, I think the only difference ultimately between those who accomplish and those who don't, is that
right.
those who accomplish have all of the self-doubt and all of the fears. They just
sure.
do it anyhow. Yeah. Right? Just normal people doing,
it's been said that,
you know,
successful people
things.
Fail more often than people who are not successful.
That's it. Amen. Yeah.
And then
yeah,
learn from their
sure.
failures, and it doesn't stop them. It just it drives
exactly.
them further.
The obstacle is the way. It's a great book. Ryan Holiday, amazing author. Great book. I highly
you're
recommend
kind of
it.
There's some background noise. So I had a hard time. Why don't you repeat the name of the book again, David?
The Obstacle is the Way.
Okay.
The Obstacle is the Way. Ryan Holiday, R-Y-A-N Holiday. Beautiful book, just about. And if you resonate on the title of the book, The Obstacle is the Way, then, I mean, mm-hmm. you, although the book is, you know, I recommend the book, but if you think about that, the obstacle is the way. Wherever the obstacle
right.
lies, that is where your growth lies. That is where life lies. That's where the challenge lies. That's where the beauty lies.
Exactly. You know, I had this question that I wrote down, and I think it's the wrong question to ask, but here's my question. I think you've corrected me. We'll discuss it anyway. And I said, do you
sure.
think with enough education, can we rid the earth of plastic? And I'm hearing, no, plastic has some really good benefits to it.
No, it's excellent. Totally. Plastic is awesome.
Otherwise, it wouldn't
honestly,
be around,
plastic
right?
Awesome.
It wouldn't be so,
exactly.
it wouldn't be using it.
Right. Right, so no,
so
we don't. With enough education, though, we'll see that there's value in it, that it's important, and that the value. I mean, we're seeing the value in the plastic of fish, that it has a huge cost, a huge expense viewed properly, huge. So with enough education, we can change that. Enough
right.
education,
yeah.
we can reveal the value in it, so people want to hold it and use it for things.
What
this,
about
you know,
all the bottled water Americans drink? Is that a problem?
That's ridiculous. You know, I live in Vancouver. We've got one of the highest quality tap waters in the world, and everything it drives me crazy. You know, it's convenience. It's all kinds of things. It's still, it's in plastic. It's still good. Reuse that bottle. Don't, you know, make sure that you're not using things that are completely wasteful. Lids, straws, things like that. All the excessive packaging is ridiculous. And there's still a long way to go. And I don't want to diminish the overuse of plastic, because we are overusing plastic. It's true.
Right.
My comment there was that, yeah, it's not the plastic itself, it's us. So the plastic itself, again, inert, is not good nor bad, but what we do with it makes it so. So be careful with it.
Now, how can I convince my community's recycled? It's always recycled. Is there any way to convince local municipalities to send us recycling plastic to social plastic? The plastic we use in the States here, is there any way to route that differently?
I don't know
what they do with it.
Well, the municipal waste stream, you know, is valued on the global market, because that's where most of the recycled plastic comes from. It's curbside pickup and things like that. And when you get stuff out in the market that's used out of recycled plastic, or traditionally municipal waste stream, not social plastic by any means. And so what can you do to convince your local community? You know, I'm a sales guy in the end, and, you know, I'm always, you know, this saying, it's, you know, a man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. So can you convince someone against their will to recycle when they don't think it's important? I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think you can convince anyone of anything, but you can help educate, and you can lead. And I think there's something about being authentic and about exhibiting the change and being the change and leading that to others. I mean, wherever I go, you know, I travel, I'm actually on, I live, you know, feet from a beautiful little rugged beach on the west coast of Canada, just outside of Vancouver, a little community called Deep Cove. I think it's the most beautiful community, the most beautiful country in the world. And I pick up plastic wherever I go, and I exhibit that, and I traditionally find a discarded film bag. So I want to honor that bag. So I pick up the bag and I walk the seashore and I pick up plastic. And people see that, and I'm just living authentically. It's what I need to do, and I'm confident that it continues to exhibit what is right to people, and sometimes people are afraid to be the first mover, you know.
Sure,
So you gotta be that. So just be that way. Everyone should just be that way.
Right, right. Okay, David, I have one last question for you.
Okay.
And that is, it's kind of a dual question. How does one become Eco-Citizen of the Year? What does it mean? Who bestowed that honor upon you? And it sounds like a big responsibility going forward, honestly.
Thank you. Yeah, Global Citizen. So Entrepreneurs Organization is almost 11,000 members worldwide, and they've all reached a certain level of success. There's a minimum, you know, it's an entrepreneur that's done no less than $1 million in revenue, and is a founder of the organization, and we're probably the most influential group of entrepreneurs around the world. It's all about peer-to-peer education and growth, and from that, there's that organization is run by an amazing group of people, and they collaborate and they had heard a lot about what I was doing, and they see the impact of what I'm doing, and they see what authentic leadership is, and I think that story is more about my previous answer about being the change, and when you are, people see it, and it speaks very, very loudly, and it's a great gift, and I'm honored by it, and I know I've got to be a steward of the environment and people and entrepreneurship. And it humbles me to continue working towards the betterment of the economy and everything else that comes from it, right? And my favorite few words, and I don't know who to attribute it to, reads: we have the opportunity to choose who our children's parents will be. Right? Mm-hmm. And I choose someone amazing for my kids. And that's just a choice. It's an action, right? I think that life is a verb. It's not to be still. I mean, most people sit around watching television, or I don't know what they do, but they don't act, they don't move. Even love is a verb. It's an action. To love someone is to do for them. And so I guide myself by being who I choose for my children. Right? I have the option to choose who their father is. And that's the way I conduct myself. I mean, that person's going to be a freaking rock star.
All right. Well, David, it's been a fascinating interview. If they want to learn more about you, what's your website?
Plasticbank.org. Plasticbank.org. And you can always find me, David, at plasticbank.org.
Beautiful. I want to thank you so much for this fascinating interview, that your positive solution, your innovative solution. Often we say that the solution is right in front of our eyes, and you sure proved that, David.
Yeah,
thank you very
awesome.
Much. This has
Pleasure.
Been the Mindful Revolution, brought to you by Silo Wealth Advisory, and we do sustainable investments. I'm sure David would approve of that. And take care, David. Thank you again.
Thank
See you guys
you
next
very
week.
Much. Thank you.
Bye now. Sure.
This has been the Mindful Revolution with Jeff Bogart, sponsored by Silo Wealth Advisory. If you want your money to make a difference without compromising returns, call Jeff at 855-757-7452 or visit silowealthadvisory.com.
Jeff, you still there?
Oh, yeah, I'm here. Hello.
Hey, Jeff, how was it?
Good. We had some little we had some static. I thought it was your phone, but I think it's from the radio station phone.
Oh.
So, but I really learned a lot. I like your solutions, and it's really cool. And we'll get
you
a link to it ASAP.
Awesome.
You were excellent.
Awesome.
It was really
awesome.
A fascinating show. It was just,
awesome.
And people should know about this. So.
Yeah, they should know about it. That's right. Exactly. Yeah. Now, I'm hoping that was more exciting than the Lyft lady.
Yeah, you were much better than the Lyft lady.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't have that. Okay, David. Just email
okay.
me through LinkedIn or anything, and we'll get you in. All right, take care.
Awesome. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.